It's the Press Box on ESPN 1100 and 100.9 FM.
Beautiful yet windy day here in Las Vegas on a Friday. Clay, Ed, and joined now by the Southern Nevada sports injury expert, Dr. Caleb Pinneker, here with us from Crivetti Orthopedics. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
Good to have you in, and we appreciate it. And each every other week, we go over the notable sports injuries, and Dr. Caleb Pinneker brings them down, breaks them down. And one of them was kind of like the success story of Markelle Fultz. We'll just kind of go over this briefly, who had a shoulder surgery and an injury to the point where in January, people were thinking that because it altered his shot so much that he may never play basketball again. And this week he scored a triple-double, to which end Fultz at the end of the game broke down in tears, because what a tumultuous year it has been. For you as a doctor, have you ever seen success stories like this? And what is it like for you when you see the surgery, the rehab, it all comes together and everything is back where it should be?
You know, there's nothing that'll make you happier, bring you closer to tears, or really have you in tears than seeing somebody get out and get back to what they love. That's your goal. That's the reason why you did this. And so to have a guy really who looked just miserable when you saw some of those shots previously, how's he ever going to be a pro player again, you know?
It was alarming.
It was.
And he looked very frustrated, and we had talked about how many different methods were used to try to bring him back on track, and a desperation virtual reality mode may have saved the deal. We don't know for sure.
It's hard to push blame on what it was that actually saved him, or if it's just, you know, likely is it's the combination. I mean, he had a great team working with him. They threw the book at him on what to do to help him, and now look, it's paid off. So everybody's high fives around. Everybody's very excited, I'm sure.
I want to ask you about the Rangers, Elvis Andrus, because guys now in baseball, unlike 20 years ago, they have more padding on than football players. I mean, they've got elbow pads on, they've got knee pads, everything to protect anywhere other than perhaps the core where they could get plunked. He gets plunked in the elbow. The X-ray reveals a fracture. And it sounds simplistic, but for a ball pitched that fast to break the elbow, I guess it would have to hit at an angle and on an exact spot to fracture. I could see bruise, I could see anything like that, but it doesn't seem like a lot are broken. What has to happen for a 90-mile-an-hour pitch to actually shatter an elbow? Is it that common, or is this kind of a freak thing where he just got hit at the exact spot?
It's got to be hit on this. I mean, usually you see people, they're taking it in the thigh or the calf or the shoulder,
ribs,
or the
or
back.
Somewhere.
Exactly, and that'll cause a ton of swelling, a ton of bruising, but it does have to hit you on a fairly unprotected spot. So the tip of your elbow, you all know, I mean, you bonk that on something,
right.
There's no padding. You're hitting right on it's called the olecranon. It's the tip of the elbow, basically, where it hinges. And for him to take a ball right to the tip of that elbow, it's obviously got enough force coming through. And it sounds like he doesn't need surgery. So clearly this broke in a way that's going to heal okay, not need anything fixed to it. So it had to have just cracked it.
Elbow's a weird place. Is there any kind? You don't cast it, do you? Do you cast it?
For a short time, often you do. Depending
full
on
full cast, then, if you're trying to get the elbow.
Yeah, it's either got to be in a hinged brace with it really depends on how it's broken, but you have to immobilize it, cast, brace, whichever it is you're going to choose to use, and how compliant the person's going to be. There are people that you do not send them out without a cast because you just know you can't trust them.
You just know they're gonna
you know they're gonna take it off. And so, with him or with an olecranon fracture, if it's non-displaced, which we'll also talk about, if as long as that is gonna stay in position, you want to get the elbow moving quick because the elbow gets stiff. And if he's a professional sports player or a recreational player, if you have a stiff elbow, that's no fun either. So we've got to get him moving fast.
Well, that's what we were kind of wondering, like, how long do these things take in the duration without the surgery? The Rangers, they're a last place team anyway, so they're going to try to be as very close and careful with that. But on the other side, when you have like the Red Sox and Xander Bogaerts, the infielder, he cracked a bone in his ankle, and they said he's only out 2 weeks. What did he really fracture? Because they had to help him off the field. It looked like a very serious injury.
Yeah, in reading some of the reports, if it's correct what I read, he cracked the talus, and the talus is the center bone in the lower part of the ankle, and so that's right. It's a weight-bearing bone that takes a lot of force, and if it breaks, I mean, for them to say that he's potentially out for just a couple weeks, it had to be very subtle, and it had to be in perfect position. They had to use an MRI to even find it, so it sounds like it's on the very mild spectrum of cracks or fractures, however you want to describe it. A broken bone's a broken bone, but it'll heal in the position it's in. He doesn't have to do any sort of heavy work to get it to be pieced back together, and now it's just going to be keeping his range of motion, keeping him strong.
Okay.
Having worked with Dr. James Andrews, you probably know more about the Tommy John surgery than most people on the planet. So when you, J.C. Ramirez of the Angels, I guess, undergoes Tommy John. When you were working with Dr. Andrews and learning about the surgery and learning about the UCL the most in terms of what they tear, if Clay and I go out, unathletic as we are, and stretch and throw a baseball as hard as we can, do we have as much chance of tearing it as someone who's thrown these four-seam fastballs and these curveballs their whole life? What is that joint like? How easily can that be torn? And second part of that question is, are there specific pitches, because Clay found a grafter that suggested he relied on a lot of four-seam fastballs, that will tend to lead to that UCLA tearing more than if he threw other pitches?
There's been a lot of research done to try, and if you look at some of the MLB, kind of the quick start websites, where they're trying to encourage kids to follow safe programs, there's been a lot done to try to say which pitches are at higher risk, how many pitches should these kids throw, and that spectrum chases kids all the way up to their potential high school, college, and professional career. A fastball, in theory, should be a pretty safe pitch.
And pretty straight. You're not doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you're not putting a ton on it, other than speed.
Right.
But you're not torquing your arm as far. You're not trying to put the twist and turn. And it should, you know, for a lot of guys, they're throwing it a little farther over the top.
Right.
So for that, that's the pitch that we tell young kids, practice your fastball.
Okay.
Do a fastball, a changeup. Try to keep your arm in more of a mechanical axis and don't put too much twist turn on it. So then as a kid ages and gets older, we start adding the fancier pitches and the curve, because we've always thought that the curve had a higher propensity to injure the UCL. There's been kind of conflicting reports as we do more research, but that's still generally accepted that kids should wait on a curveball, because you want them to develop and get more muscle and allow the ligament to mature prior to really pushing it.
How strong is the ligament, though? Like I said, if we went out and just warmed up and threw the ball around with you, and you termed us warmed up enough, if we just uncork it, could we tear it? Or is it something that this UCLA, what am I doing? The Bruins, go Bruins. The UCL over time, because of the torque on it, wears on it. Like, how stringent and strong is this UCL in an average person who isn't a major league pitcher?
It's strong for you and I. If we're playing weekend ball, not common for us to tear it. We're not throwing it hard enough. We're not throwing it fast enough. The time we see a UCL injury in people like us is going to be, you know, a traumatic episode. You take a fall, you go out to support yourself, and all the weight goes on it.
Exactly. Okay.
Not often for one of us to really tear it to the point of full thickness tear by throwing a ball.
Okay.
These guys, I mean, we do notice that if you take a baseball player who's never been an isolated pitcher, if you take a guy, you're like, man, he's an outfielder, but he's got a strong arm. Let's convert him to a pitcher.
Right.
Now you add the load of being a pitcher, more reps, higher velocity, higher torque.
Different torque.
We see those guys tear it, potentially more commonly than the rest of the team, because now they're trying to
do
a job
that
ligament didn't prepare for over a lot number of years. But for you or I, we shouldn't tear it. And if we did tear it, we'd have a pretty frank discussion. Do we even need to fix that thing? Because you and me, we can probably get by.
That's the voice of Dr. Caleb Bittiger, Southern Nevada's leading sports injury expert at Crivetti Orthopedics. Go online, CrivettiOrtho.com. Follow him on Twitter at Crivetti Ortho as well. We're watching the game now. Wrigley Field, Braves lead the Cubs 4-0. Cubs in a little bit of a transition without their power hitter, Anthony Rizzo, and he's on the DL with back tightness, and he blamed the bad beds in that Cincinnati hotel when they were on the road.
No chance that was a Marriott, by the way.
No chance.
Go on.
Maybe they sent him at the Hampton Inn. I'm not really sure. No, we love the Hampton.
Well, and it's Cincinnati, so.
How often do you see people in your everyday life or at Crivetti Orthopedics complaining about their beds, and the reason why their back problems are occurring is because they can't find the right bed?
You know, surprisingly, I get people that ask me, and I don't per se specialize in backs, but I have people who want my opinion. What kind of back should I get? I've tried everything, and it's just not working. I mean, there's been some studies to try to look at what kind of back's best or what kind of bed is best. And really, you know, you're looking for a bed that provides you with support. If you're just getting the spongiest, softest bed out there, then your back's in who knows what position.
Okay.
And so a medium firm or firm mattress, that's typically where you get pointed. But everybody's different, you know. That's why they're, I guess, sleep numbers making a bed that mom and dad or whoever is in the bed together can have a separate type of level of support depending on what's good for them.
It's interesting because a couple years back had some therapy on my back and I actually threw out, could it be the bed? And she goes, no, but it can be your posture, which is horrible. I mean, and when you go to a therapist and they actually kind of put your arms back of what you should be on a daily basis, like, you stand in that if you don't have good posture, which I don't. You stand in that for like a minute, you are in major pain. And you don't realize over time as you get older and everything how bad your posture becomes. I would think posture is probably more an issue, not for Rizzo, but posture for all of us out here might be a bigger issue than what mattress you have. Would you agree with that?
I think that's true. And it's the demand on our bodies. Our society has tended, you know, we've kind of become a little more forward. We're on a computer.
Yes.
We're looking at a phone. Our head's forward, our shoulders are forward. We historically are a rear-sided, weak population now because, no, we don't stand. We don't properly put our shoulders back and droop and pull them down and try to keep our scapula fixed. So a lot of that, and our spines tend to kind of lean forward instead of being upright. So,
I got a question for you. My wife's a runner. She runs long distance, but her back hurts. You do that much pounding outside on pavement, you're going to have back problems. Clay and I said this. Clay said he did this. He didn't have back problems. I don't know why he was doing this. This was a little weird on my moose friend
over here. I'm a curious guy.
He's a very curious guy. At times, she has slept with a pillow tucked between her legs because she thinks that takes the pressure off the back. Now, I don't know if this is an old wives' tale. I don't know if she, in her mind, thinks the lower back feels better after this. One, have you ever heard of this? And two, could this actually help?
Yeah, in people that we operate on hips, we encourage them to sleep with a little pad on them.
Oh,
if they're a side sleeper specifically. If you're on your back, then you're probably pretty well aligned. But if you think about it, where's that upper leg going when you're on your side? It's either falling in front of you or it's falling behind you.
Exactly.
And it leaves some of those muscles on stretch through the night. And that can potentially irritate your back. So if you posturally keep yourself neutral, which a pillow between the legs is going to keep that leg propped up in more of that alignment, that can help take tension off your back.
In your business, I assume you cannot stress, and you and I both said this before the show, we were laughing, and I run 4 or 5 times a week. I think I stretch enough. There's no way I do, though. And I know, you know that for a fact. How important, because you just hear there's classes on stretching. Yoga, you said, is very important. Mm-hmm. I said my wife continues to do yoga. She runs because of the whole stretching. But how important is it? I think we all think we stretch enough, but we don't, do we?
Oh, yeah.
You probably.
No, we don't. And for people, it's... People come to my office, their shoulder hurts, and they say, well, but I lift weights. I don't have weakness. And it's like, well, because as we've talked about, shoulder posture is such a dynamic range of multiple muscles. The same things with your core and your legs, all of that. It's easy to hit the gym, do some exercises, but you're not hitting every muscle group.
Right.
And so in a runner, they get tight because they're using the quads, hamstrings, and they maybe don't stretch as much at the end. And so their low back gets tight, their hips get tight.
It's interesting you told me runners are definitely some of the tighter people in terms of the quads, the hammies, things we tend to tear or pull over time. And even if they're fit, you from the bodies you see, the runners can give more of the more tightness throughout their body.
They really can, yeah.
This is fascinating. I don't know. I didn't mean to interrupt because I got more questions about these beds.
he wants an experiment.
Yeah.
Marriott, Clay. Marriott mattresses. They sell them online.
Well, what about the beds that, like, you see in these commercials where, you know, the couple are sleeping there and the guy starts snoring and then immediately she goes, hits a button and she inverts his bed. Is that healthy for people? I mean, are you supposed to do that? I mean,
sleep in a more upright position. We're going to all be in recliners. That's where we're headed anyway. There's so much good stuff on TV. No one's ever want to go to bed.
That's anymore, right.
You know? We're all be in recliners all the time.
Yeah, these beds will come with
Netflix
next.
To you.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a great life.
Are you supposed to sleep like that? I mean, is that just kind of like a nuance to a bed? Like, all right, temporarily you can do that, but do not sleep all night like that.
You know, I've never heard to say that it would be potentially harmful. People that have bad shoulders find that they're more comfortable if they're propped a little better. And so I've had people come and they say, you know, I had to give up sleeping in a regular bed because my shoulder hurts all night long. So if I sleep in a recliner, I'm okay. And people that snore, the farther you lay back, the potential more pressure you put on your airway, and they also snore worse, and so they prop themselves up slightly. But I couldn't comment to say that you're in worse shape if you prop yourself
up. Okay, because I was thinking maybe that's just an easy way to just start fixing your posture, or if you do have like sleep apnea for something like that, hey, make sure you start sleeping more on your sides or something like that. It seems like it's just like an easy fix just to get rid of the snoring.
Yeah.
Instead of actually fixing a real problem.
And the trick is once we fall asleep, all bets are off, right? We wake up and we're like, how'd I get here?
Right.
And so
that's happened to me a lot back in the early days. You're at the Moose Lodge. You don't know where you're at after.
Oh, after the week I had, I'm just still trying to come true. I'm still tripping. All right, more questions on the text line about certain pillows that they advertise that rest your neck and fix your neck. What's the validity on some of these products that are out there that try to say, like, these are miracle cures?
The MyPillow guy, he's always on there, right? He's got a fix for
say
everybody.
Anything. Yeah, he's a very powerful man.
You have to support your neck and you got to support your head. And the better aligned you are, if you're a side sleeper, you want to try to give support to those structures so that while you're sleeping at nighttime, you're not kinking it real far. You've probably all slept on too hard or too soft of a pillow and you wake up really feeling crooked and it hurts. And so it can be tough. There's no one that's going to make everybody in the world's problem better. It's a little bit of a matchmaking process. You got to find what fits you and what's comfortable for you. And if you're on your back versus on your side or on your belly, it's going to depend.
I promise I'll never ask another bed or pillow question again as long as I live. But you got to take advantage of these times.
Marriott.com, my friend. You'll be fine. this Kawhi Leonard story continues to swirl. Now he's gone back to New York, as you know, for the second opinion. Shannon Sharp came on today and said, you know what Kawhi Leonard saw? He saw what happened to Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah's never going to get that $150 million. So Kawhi said, you know what? If I'm getting $200 million, I'm going to make sure this quad is 1,000%. He is telling the Spurs, I cannot explode off this like before. And Tony Parker is saying, my injury on the quad was 100% worse, and I'm back playing. The quad itself, it does appear, at least from the outside looking in, someone not in your profession, lay people like us, I even thought, and I love Kawhi Leonard as a player, this guy's not back from a quad? What could potentially, without obviously being his doctor, what could potentially be happening with a quad that would keep him out an entire NBA season and for him to continue to say, I cannot explode off this leg?
It's got to be what he's feeling in practice. I mean, as far as injury goes, a tendonitis or a strain can persist.
And this long?
It can keep going. Wow. And so is that a question of, shoot, did he not take early enough time off? In the story of Parker, if you tear the thing, you repair it, you fix it, the tendonitis by definition should go away because now you've not only you've taken care of the chronic problem because it became an acute problem.
Right.
So in him who has this chronic ongoing, you know, it's hard to say maybe he'd be better if he just tore the thing, but
that's interesting because he is now or his people are now suggesting it was misdiagnosed. But correct me if I'm wrong, if you're diagnosing this, isn't it, it's a tear or it's not a tear? How intrusive could a diagnosis be on a quad? Could there be a million things wrong with the quad? Or could it? Aren't you just saying there's a tear or there's not a tear? And it appears, at least, that everything I've read, it's pretty much rest and rehab. I mean, not like surgically repair. Would you surgically repair a tear?
If there was a tear in the quad, if it was at where the tendon attaches to bone, then that's it can't make
can't
up a gap.
Back.
It can't go back. So you do have to put it back on.
Okay.
There. So
but
that's
if not,
surgery.
Then it's
if
rest
not,
and
then and not, if not, it's a real tough sell to try to say, hey, we should cut this open if it's not torn.
Right.
And so, you know, could you find somebody that might say, well, you've tried everything else, you might as well open up and look. You know, if he keeps having problems, you kind of wonder if someone's going to get to that point.
Yeah, it's fascinating because what you said about runners, just average runners having some of the tighter bodies, well, Leonard's physique is probably NBA perfect. If you put an NBA perfect body, it would be his. But I would also gather, tell me if I'm wrong, that guy, as athletic as he is, could they also have tightness in their bodies, unlike the average Joe with, you know, the looseness and more fat on him than Leonard tearing that? Could that even be a hindrance because he is so tight and he's just so well-formed?
Because he's so tall and such a big body to move around. I mean, I think his flexibility, that's for sure, that's something they've been working on. His flexibility all throughout this process. It's all when you have a quad or a hamstring, it's exercises and stretching and trying to do local treatments, whether they're doing some needling procedures or doing some ultrasound. I'm sure they've exhausted so much of that. But now I guess
it's fascinating. It's been the whole season.
Yeah,
for a quad.
It is. That's a long time.
That's a long time for a quad.
And we put just about another couple minutes. What were your thoughts on the Rockets' Amute? He dislocated a left shoulder on a dunk, but he had already separated his other shoulder in December. So now we have two separated shoulder injuries in the span of maybe like 6 months. Is that dangerous or is that not uncommon?
Well, it's unless you've really got a connective tissue problem, like where you have just loose joints, we don't often see that. It's not to say it's unheard of. I mean, he came up off of a big dunk, and it sounds like with enough force, popped it right out of there. But he rehabbed the first one, didn't go through any surgery, mm-hmm. went through, missed several games, missed a couple months, really, and came back. But now, you know, if he's dislocated this other side and now has to try to decide whether he goes through with surgery on that. A dislocation in a player of that, you know, high impact, high demand on the shoulder, my thought is, shoot, he's got a high rate of dislocating this thing again. You know, can you rehab him and get him through the rest of the season?
Maybe you sit him out for a playoff series, but other than that, it's probably, I don't know how many more weeks he has left.
Yeah, he's probably looking at off-season surgery.
Off-season surgery, okay.
Okay, before we let you, I got to ask this. Did you see Tony Finau pop the ankle in and out at the Masters?
Oh, forgot about that.
Okay, this was bizarre. Oh, so he hits a hole-in-one. It's a par 3 challenge the day before the Masters. This was insanity. He runs down the fairway, rolls the ankle to where it pops out, dislocates. He reaches down, and the camera's on it. Pops it right back in, and then he has somewhat of a limp going out, but he plays the whole Masters. Actually played very well. It was his first Masters. There was definitely bruising. They showed pictures the next day of bruising and everything. And I was saying, okay, I played so much basketball. I've rolled it a ton of times. I never got to the dislocation, though, because then at that point they would have carried me out because I would have fainted if I ever saw that. I would have been in the ambulance. Clay would have had to come get me. This guy just reached down and popped it in. How difficult is that, and how... Just tell me about the joint that's possible. And I know right now if I, like, pulled a finger or something, you could do it. You could put it right back in for me. But just this guy in the middle of a fairway popping it back in, I couldn't watch it. I had to watch it. I was like one of those leathernecks on the freeway with you have to watch the action. Yeah. I had to replay this a million times, as sick as it made me. But, like, how common is that? Well, how can people do that?
For him to be able to reach down and pull it back in.
That's crazy.
Man, my first question is, how many times has he done that before?
There's no way this is the first. He did it because he popped it in so easily. He's like, let's do this.
It's got to be loose enough where he could, because in a regular episode, if you dislocate your ankle, they're probably shipping you to the hospital with it dislocated, because the paramedic's going to be a little terrified to put it back in, and it is going to hurt a lot.
Yes.
And so you're usually ending up with some sedation, with some pain medicine in the ER for that's... I'll have to do a little lookup, but
you've got to watch this.
There's
doctor.
No way
you've
he did
this.
That
it
for
was
the first time.
Weird. Are you the doctor that if I dislocate something right now, are you the guy who, when I'm on the bed passed out, but I finally wake up, you talk to me about sports and you do it when I'm not expecting you to? Because if I do it when you do it when I expect you, you know I'm passing out or like screaming like a crazy person.
You've got to read the person a little bit. I definitely have done that before.
Reading me, you would be talking to me about something else. You would not let me know you're about to do it.
Nope.
You got to. When you come and
you'd yell at me and say, "Why'd you do that?" And I say, "Well, you weren't going to let me, so I had to."
Please watch that on YouTube, because that's the first thing I thought is, no chance that's the first thing this happened to this guy. Yeah. I mean, it was like, it was gross to watch, but I'm like, he did it so, like, he had it. And again, there was bruising because he went on, like, Twitter the next day with pictures of his ankles. Everyone's like, everyone freaked out, like, oh, my God, how did you do that?
Yeah.
So there was bruising like you do when you roll it.
Oh,
there's bruising
sure.
the next day.
Mm-hmm.
But, doctor, I'm telling you, this was so bizarre. I'm like, how loose must that joint be? And why would have someone rolled their ankle that much in their life to be able to do that?
It almost seemed like an involuntary response to just go and like fix it the best thing he could.
It was almost
an
embarrassing moment because the world's watching. So he said, I got to pop it right back in. And then he just kind of limped up and his family's screaming, running at him.
It's amazing he did it, because if it was the first go, he would have been in so much shock and spasm that he couldn't have done it. So that's...
That was awesome.
That's a video to go in a future lecture for sure. That's great.
Well, we appreciate the time. We know it's a busy Friday for you, and we thank you again, especially all the people over at Crivetti Orthopedics. It's a lot of fun having you in and going over these injuries, and we look forward to talking again at the end of the month. Thanks
great.
Again.
Thank you, guys. Have
Thanks very
day.
Much, Doctor.
When we come back, we'll talk a little more NFL on all the crazy stories that have gone on today, from Dez Bryant all the way through with Scott Bilo next.